Welcome to the Macca's Run with Sam Hargraves. With special sauce and juicy beef, grab the one and only Big Mac at Macca's today.
Good evening. Welcome to the Macca's Run. Jordan Canellis with you here on SEN. Good to be in your company on a Monday night to wrap up a big weekend of sport. That turned out to be a better weekend of sport than I anticipated. The shape of the ladder changed again this week with Carlton's loss and Richmond's win, the pivot points of round 20. The Commonwealth Games is going about as well as we would have hoped. While there were more landmarks around the world in women's football, the Special K's in tennis, Kyrgios and Kokkinakis in the doubles, and in the UFC as well, just to name a few. But a pretty big weekend overall, and we're here to wrap it up on the Macca's Run. Jordan Canellis here for Macca's. Try Classic Angus at Macca's today. You can send us a text, 0433 98 11 16 for Temper, a mattress like no other. You can give us a call on the Harcourts open line. Your move, your Harcourts, 1300 736 736. For the third week in a row, a Richmond game has been decided by someone impulsively playing on. However, this time they were the beneficiaries and it secured a win at the death rather than have it slip through their fingers. Darcy Gardner's play on under pressure and subsequent turnover means the Tigers stay in touch and keep their season alive. They beat the bottom-rung West Coast in round 16. So if we put that to one side, a win's a win. We're not trying to diminish the win. But as far as major wins against good opponents go, this was their first big win since Carlton in round 14. That was six games ago, the Tigers. They're 2 points outside the top eight and have a better percentage than the Saints, who are in eighth at the moment. So they still need to get the wins to jump above. But the percentage is going all right once they get to either level or above the teams around them on the ladder. For Brisbane, though, well, what does it mean about the Lions? This is what David King had to say about Brisbane earlier today on SEN.
All warts get exposed against good teams, and the finals have started early this year. It's as simple as that. And I think Chris Fagan would sit there today and think, wow, what are we? What's our big asset? And if I said to you, why will Brisbane win it, what would you say? So why would all of a sudden this work for Brisbane, given that it hasn't worked for Geelong, it hasn't worked for Richmond? I don't know. I just think this comes back to the planning. So you can say what you like. You can argue who wasn't there, who was there, and, oh, we got to 42 points up. Dennis Pagan used to say you can talk like losers for as long as you like, but you'll continue to talk as losers. I don't know whether there's another option now because we're 3 weeks out from the final. So you've got to stick with this plan. But you've got to hope that Lachie Neale goes crazy to win the thing. And crazy is like 40 touches a week and 10 score assists. So it's next level crazy. We don't see next level crazy in finals. So I think it's a line through Brisbane.
A line through Brisbane from David King. What say you? 0433 98 11 16 for Temper. A mattress like no other. Are you ruling Brisbane out of the finals race? They sit in fifth on the ladder right now. Geelong are in first, Melbourne second, Collingwood and Sydney in the top four. Brisbane fifth, Fremantle sixth, Carlton seventh, St Kilda eight. That's the top eight as it looks right now with Richmond and the Western Bulldogs and Gold Coast, who are technically not out of the race, sitting in 11th on the table. Those teams, actually, so the teams in 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th now carry the most, well, I say now, they probably already did, but they carry the most fascinating storyline in the final 3 weeks. The two higher placed teams in that bunch, Carlton in 7th and St Kilda in 8th, they have the toughest runs home. So Carlton play Brisbane, Melbourne and Collingwood. St Kilda face Geelong, Brisbane and Sydney. The reality that those two teams might not win any more games is very possible. The two lower placed teams have the easier run homes. So Richmond in 9th have Port Adelaide, Hawthorn and Essendon, while the Dogs in 10th have Fremantle and then the Giants and Hawthorn. Both of those teams could probably pick up at least two more wins, and that would bring us down to a battle down the wire in the final round of the season. Technically, the Suns' season is still alive as well. They're on 36 points with Hawthorn, Geelong and North Melbourne to come. And even two wins from those three for the Suns could give them a shot if every other team above them loses. Port are gone. Their season pretty much over now. They're a further game back. But that is the story of the battle between 7th to 10th. And I don't think we anticipated Carlton to be in this group at the moment. Their loss on the weekend, well, have they lost their bundle, the Blues? Are they at risk of derailing and missing the finals? They were all at sea. They were misshapen on Saturday night against the Crows. They haven't put a winning streak together since rounds 9 and 10. So that's a while ago now. That's 10 weeks ago. And the loss to the Crows this weekend just gone was probably their worst loss for the season, not by margin, but by way of who their opponents were. Michael Voss has done a phenomenal job to this point in the season to keep the Blues in the hunt for, well, top four for a while, considering their injury list. But now as those players return, the results haven't improved. This was the loss they couldn't afford to have with the tricky run home, as I mentioned before. That's all coming up. And now this is the toughest patch that Voss will need to navigate his season through. Starts with an away trip to his old club, Brisbane, as well, which should be fascinating this weekend on Sunday. I estimate one more win should be enough, you'd reckon, for Carlton, doing it in the final 3 weeks of the season. But doing it against the Lions this weekend might be all they need. I'd hope that they get at least one win in the final stanza of the home and away. But they'll have to beat a top five team in order to get there. So in the old argument of, do you beat them or do you join them? Well, Carlton will have to beat one of them in order to join them. They have to beat one of those top five teams in order to join the rest of the crew in the finals. Again, on the Monday means test, this was David King's assessment of the Blues.
It was the most arrogant performance I've seen for a long time. They just thought they were going to turn up and they were going to get through the Adelaide Crows because of where they are on the AFL table. And I'm not saying the coach said that. I'm not saying the leader said that. They played like that.
So how did it manifest in your eyes?
Well, you could see it. I mean, it's just the desire indicators, you know, things like broken tackles, 23 broken tackles, which is the season high. They stepped through them. And it wasn't like they were walking through first gamers. It was Cripps. It was Walsh. Some of Walsh's defensive actions, he would be embarrassed about at the review today.
David King labelling the Blues as arrogant today. Blues fans, for you, which way will it go? Where does this last win come from? Does it come at all? I know a couple of pessimistic Blues fans who don't think they'll win their final three games of the season, Brisbane, Melbourne and Collingwood, to be those final three games. Do you pick up one of them? Do you pick up two of them? Do you pick up none of them? Which way does it go for you, Carlton fans? 1-300-736-736, your move, your Harcourts. That's the talkback number. You can send us a text, 0433-98-1116. Collingwood earned yet another narrow win this weekend. Admittedly, it wasn't a close thriller to the same level of some of their other games prior, as they swelled a sturdy lead to around about four goals by three-quarter time. But towards the end of the game, well, Port did claw their way back and made them earn it with some heart-pounding final minutes. Another spirited win for the Pies. I like this Magpies team. I like their hunger. I like their tenacity. I like their tackling pressure. I like their flair. It's all represented in more than just Jack Ginnivan. While he might be the most clear embodiment of all those qualities, it's more than just him. He might be the barometer, but there's a crew that snap at the heels of their opponents. As a team, I don't know which way they'll tip, though. They've done extremely well to balance along this tightrope of a nail-biting 10 victories, 10 straight victories. Which way do they fall once we get to September? Will they crash down in the finals when they face the reality of playing finals-ready teams in September who are ready to crush any opponent in the name of achieving success, particularly if Collingwood keep in the top four? You're thrown into an environment where you can't really afford to flirt with conceding runs of goals and leaving things till too late. Or do they excel as a unit? Do they get better? Do they find that extra gear? Do they find that new level of mongrel once you get into the finals? I'm really intrigued by this Collingwood team because it feels like third on the ladder seems a bit too ahead of time. While it's great, and I'm sure Collingwood fans are absolutely enjoying it right now, and the winning run they've had, third on the ladder, no one expected this. Melbourne reaffirmed to us how good they can be when it all goes their way. Is one win in the wet away to the Dockers enough for us to rest easy on our judgment of the D's? Maybe not for some people, but for me, I'm pretty comfortable with the Demons and what they've done in the previous couple of weeks. That win on Friday transforms the look of their form line to a more favourable one in recent weeks. So since the bye, Melbourne have had four wins in six games, including wins against Brisbane, Port and Freo, and two interstate victories as well. But their run home is where we'll see the real Demons. This is crunch time now for them to gather momentum and go into the finals swinging. They've got Collingwood, Carlton, and then away to Brisbane to finish the season. So Melbourne's finals really starts now. They've got, I mean, these next three games won't determine if they make finals or not. They're in. They'll make finals. But they're playing finals teams in the last three rounds of the season before actually getting to the finals. So this is a very important next patch here for the Demons. And if it doesn't work for Melbourne, then Sydney could be the ones to benefit. So they earned their fourth win in a row on the weekend. They've won seven of their last nine matches. If the Demons do end up stumbling in that run home, so Collingwood, Carlton and Brisbane, just to re-establish for Melbourne, If they end up stumbling there, the Swans will be waiting, ready to pounce and maybe push for second place and a home qualifying final. They've got North Melbourne at home, Collingwood away and St Kilda at home to finish the campaign, Sydney. Even if you don't consider the Swans as a bona fide flag threat just yet this season, they could be the ones to benefit from a lighter run home and end up slithering through the cracks to end up in second on the ladder by the end of the season. That would end up giving them great starting position for a deep run in the finals. It's kind of like, if you're a Formula One fan, it's kind of like a high to mid-ranged F1 car qualifying on the front row of the grid out of nowhere. They might not be a fast enough car to go the journey and win the race, but that starting position could be enough to set them up for at least a top five finish and some pretty good points. That could be the Swans this season. They might not win the flag or win a prelim final. They might. There's every reason they could, but they might not. But they're giving themselves the best possible position. And if they make the most of a hypothetical demon stumble, this is all because this is just speculation if the Ds were to stumble, but that could be them. They could set themselves up for a home qualifying final in the best result. And then today, David Mundy announced his retirement. He'll finish up at the end of the season. He's currently the oldest player in the league. He spent 19 seasons in the AFL. He'll finish up with at least about 375 games to his name. He's on 371 right now. He's a brilliant and honest footballer. He's the ultra professional and playing the important roles right up to his final days as well. Not one to have his career extended by playing elsewhere out of position for the last few seasons. He's been one of my favourite players among the players outside of the team I support, and I think that's probably true for most football fans as well. 0433 98 11 16 to send through a text for Temper, a mattress like no other. You can give us a call for Harcourts. Your move, your Harcourts. 1300 736 736. We'll take one call before we get to the break. Neil is with us from Port Melbourne. Yes, from Port Melbourne to have a chat about Brisbane. Hello, Neil. How's things?
Very good, thanks, Geordie. I did have a couple of questions, though. I don't know whether you caught the game yesterday.
Yes, saw most of it.
I was just querying. There was that umpiring decision where the Brisbane player kicked the goal, and the umpire asked for a video review of whether the ball was touched.
Yes,
I think it was in the last quarter, and then when the video review came up, it showed that the ball had clearly crossed the line, and the commentary that came over from the adjudicator said that watching the video, the ball has clearly crossed the line before it was touched. But then the goal was reversed because they said they found there was an infringement when they watched the video. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, that is correct. But he acknowledged the free kick even before they went to the review. So Noah Bolter, they had said that it's your free kick. He was the one who won the free kick, and I think it was Oscar McInerney who gave it away. And so the umpire acknowledged that free kick was there before they went to the review. They went to the review, did the review, said it was a goal, and then overturned it anyway because the free kick had been paid prior. So I don't know what I heard. I think it was Andy Maher earlier said he might have thought that Noah Bolter was the forward and it would have been given to him, but it was obviously not the case. And yeah, I don't know why. I am totally perplexed by that.
Yeah, that was my only concern because it is not a rule that they can pick something up on the video review and then award a free kick. So it was definitely, I just don't know why they went to the review to see whether there was a goal or a point if there was a free kick. Mm. I didn't know what was going on. And just further, just in on top of what you said about Brisbane and what their thoughts are, it doesn't seem like, I think it's probably not to do with the midfield. I think it's just more to do with the forward line. It just looks like, I don't know, when they play those sorts of games, they always look the same where they struggle for long periods to get any sort of connection in the forward line.
Yeah, yeah. The forward line seemed a little bit, yeah, it did seem disjointed yesterday. And the other thing was, as dangerous and crafty as the Smalls are, Richmond's defence had their number on the Smalls. Like McCarthy popped up here and there. Charlie Cameron had a goal or two, but for the most part, there wasn't any sustained excellence in that forward line from Brisbane. I think the Richmond defence did a pretty decent job on those Smalls. So there wasn't any X factor to stand up. The talls were smothered. I think Joe Danaher did all right in the first half, but Eric Hipwood wasn't really in the game. I think Richmond's defence actually, that was, I mean, further to Brisbane, just looking a little bit out of joint, it was also Richmond's excellence in the back line.
Yep. All right, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it. Just further to Neil's point as well. So on the free kick, that was awarded on the goal line. Was it even a free kick to Noah Bolter? I mean, it was a very slight. There were hands in the back, and there was maybe a little nudge from the side, but God, it looked pretty soft. That's a push. That's not really a push from the umpires. 0433981116. We'll take more of your calls and your thoughts on the other side of this. The Macca's run. Try Classic Angus at Macca's today. Jordan Canellis with you on SEN this Monday night.
Welcome to the Macca's run with Sam Hargraves. With special sauce and juicy beef, grab the one and only Big Mac at Macca's today.
Jordan Canellis filling in for Sam Hargraves on the Macca's run tonight. So we'll have Matt Rendell with us at 5:30. To wrap up the weekend of footy, we'll have an early edition of the First Serve at 7 p.m. and then onto Commonwealth Games coverage tonight. Live coverage coming your way on SEN from 8 p.m. But plenty of callers on the line, so we'll try and rattle through these. Tony is with us from Q to chat about the Cats. Hello, Tony.
Yeah, good evening, Jordan. I just have a bit of a quick chat with you. I know you want to get a lot of people on the line, so I'll keep it brief. If you look at form and form alone in the last, several weeks, there's only one club or one team that has any possibility of winning the premiership, and the spotlight has got to be 100% trained on Geelong. They've got elite players. They're in fantastic form. They've got a reasonable coach. And I can't see any reason why Geelong isn't a clear favourite to win the premiership based on all those considerations.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Geelong, in my mind, are the clear favourite. If I was to rank the teams like they do with the seedings, I would have Geelong at number one. It doesn't mean I'm ruling out the likes of Melbourne or Sydney or even Brisbane, but I think Geelong are the number one seed. Just by this is the middle phase of the season is some of the hardest wins you'll get in a season because of conditions. It's often wet and rainy, and it's not easy to play football. It's injuries as well. By the middle point of the season, you're getting injuries, you're getting players missing games. And Geelong have had that as well. They've had some key players missing. Not as many as some other clubs, but you did have Tom Stewart out, just to name one. And they've survived all that tough sort of dim slog of the middle part of the season. They've done all that. Geelong have been... We've spoken about them before as being a great home and away team, but it goes missing during finals. But I think this team is different this year. It just feels different. They have more potency in attack. They're still great in defence as well. I think this Geelong team deserves to be number one, and it feels like they've got a bit of a difference about them this year compared to previous.
I totally agree with you, Jordan. And the issue is this. If they don't go on and become premiers this year, it would be catastrophic.
Would you say, I like the play on words, would you say this is, I feel like every year we say, oh, this is Geelong's last chance, but how can it be their last chance when they are looking so good this season? So how many more seasons can Geelong perhaps challenge for the flag, Tony?
Well, some of their players are getting older. I mean, as we know, Dangerfield is a brilliant player, but, everybody has an end point in their career. I don't think he can get better than what he is. That's why I'm saying that the planets are aligning for Geelong. They've been there and done that in finals and lead-ups, and yes, they've failed on previous seasons. But I think the scrutiny has got to be fairly and squarely on their shoulders. Forget about the Collingwoods and the Melbournes and any of the others. Geelong, the spotlight has got to be on Geelong. And if they fail, it will send. It will just be a complete and utter disaster, as far as I'm concerned, because there's no team at the moment that has been so dominant across the board as Geelong. So, if they've proven to be that good coming into the finals, and they'll make the grand, if they make the grand final, then I don't think they can afford to drop it. I really don't.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Tony from
Thank
Q.
You.
Thank you, Tony from Q on the Harcourts open line. Your move, your Harcourts. We've got time just enough for one more caller. Joe from Point Cook. Evening, Joe.
How you going?
Good. The Tigers on your mind.
Yeah, my mates think I'm a bit crazy. I'm a Hawks supporter, but I reckon the Tigers are going to come good at the pointy end of the season and celebrate once again on the big dance, I reckon. Mm-hmm. Like, they've lost a couple of games, obviously, just due to poor finishing and unluckiness, but I reckon luck's starting to turn, and it just showed on the weekend. And I'd actually be worried if they just make it 7th or 8th. I reckon they'll do a doggies and just go right through and shock the side. They know exactly what to do come finals.
Yes.
And their players will be coming back prime and early. Dusty will be ready for finals and probably another Normie on his around his neck and then off to Sydney.
Another Norm Smith for Dusty. I don't know if I'd put my money on that, but I wouldn't put it past the Tigers being a threat in the finals. I don't know if they'll win the flag, but if you look at it from the perspective that, well, they've had three losses and a draw in the last month or so, where it came down to just one play that they could have swung the game from being an adverse result to being a win. Then they'd be on 14 wins right now and they'd be in the top four. So if you're looking at it from that kind of view and you're being optimistic about it, then you can certainly take that view, Joe. But then also the other way you could go, well, they should have won those games earlier in the match rather than just the final play of the game. So what about the rest of the 150 minutes of the match instead of just the last minute? They should have won the games earlier. But I appreciate your point of view, Joe, in Point Cook. The Maccas run here on SEN. Try a classic Angus at Maccas today. The Tigers, I think, in the bottom four, or the bottom four of the top eight. So if they make, let's say they make it and St Kilda are the ones to miss out on the current ladder, the Tigers and Carlton will be the teams that I'd be most concerned about. Maccas run continues next. Matt Rendell will be with us. Welcome back to the Maccas run. Jordan Canellis with you this evening, filling in for Sam Hargraves. 0433 98 11 16 if you'd like to send through a text, as a couple have done. One says, the Pies will crash and burn. Nearly all of their victories were close and against bottom seven sides. Even lost to the Eagles, says one. So no faith shown in Collingwood for the finals from that particular SMSer. The Blues haven't lost two games in a row all season. They'll win this week against the flaky Lions. Travis says, half the so-called experts didn't have Geelong making the final eight at the start of the season. And Ross says, do teams who play other teams lower on the ladder and win stumble into high positions? Flawed as the draw is, a team's position is the result of a year's work, not the last few rounds. The Swans have played and beaten Geelong, Melbourne and other top teams earlier in the year. David King rates the Swans a second seed right now, says Ross. I probably use the word stumble more as an analogy or a metaphor or whatever you want to say, just because at the start of the season and for the most part of the first half of the season, we were all establishing sort of Geelong, Melbourne, probably Carlton to a point as well, Brisbane, and then Fremantle, who had a great start to the season, as our top four. So it was more the fact that probably more accurately other teams had stumbled around Sydney, but the point I was making was they kind of just ended up in the top four when we might not have expected that totally from the start of the season. So that's the point, probably with a bit more accuracy, I was trying to make, because we didn't totally expect Sydney to be right here right now. But here they are, and potentially everything goes their way, finishing second on the ladder, which I don't think many people would have predicted at the start of the season or even mid-season. Matt Rendell is our expert on a Monday night here on the Maccas run. Try classic Angus at Maccas today. Evening to you, Matt. How's things?
G'day, Jordan. How you going, Marty? This is yesterday morning. Dave took your spot on Footy SA, but we had a great morning.
I'm sure he was great as well. He's a professional DK.
He is. Dave Kennedy. He was excellent. Went smoothly.
Excellent. Mm. Let's chat about the weekend's footy and some of
there was. Where do you want to start?
Well, there was a bit of shuffling, wasn't there, in the way the ladder is, and I don't think no one really expected or anticipated Carlton to be almost in a race for the eight now. They're sitting in seventh on the ladder, and they've got a pretty tough run home. I know a couple of pessimistic Carlton fans who aren't all that faithful. They'll win any of their last three games, which means they could miss finals as a worst outcome. But where do you see the Carlton's fortunes right now?
Yeah, it's a good point. We had a big discussion on that yesterday morning. Adelaide's pressure rating, that herbs and spices from Champion Data that they won't tell us what it means or how they work it out. Their pressure rating was 270 odd, Adelaide against Carlton. Really hard to deal with a pressure rating of that high, Carlton, and they couldn't deal with it. We saw the week before, Swans had 300 plus against Adelaide, and Adelaide produced a 288 in the second quarter. So we know they're capable of putting a lot of pressure on. Carlton weren't ready for Adelaide's pressure. Now, if I said to you that Cripps and Walsh get 40-plus possessions each and they still lose,
yeah,
that's a bit of a worry for me, Jordan. But the two blokes who played super well was Butts and Murray playing on Kurno and Mackay. Mm. They really, I know Kurno kicked a couple, but, you know, they were loose balls on the ground. He never got on the lead. He never took a mark. Murray's improving by the week as a key back. He looks to me as to be a future All-Australian. He's not going to get 20 possessions there, Jordan, but by Christ, it's hard to get a kick on him and a goal on him, and Butts has been great for 2 years. So, they're in a real bind here because they've got three tough games, not quite functioning right, and Adelaide did something to Carlton that no one has done all year, and it really bamboozled them. They put keys onto Saad. So Saad playing as a running back, and he's been killing it, really. They put keys on him, and Saad had no idea how to play on keys. Keys is really fit in the runner. Saad's endurance is not his strength. His pace is, his kicking and that. But a really interesting move. I'm going to watch and see if other clubs do this because he is the springboard out of defence, and it really bamboozled him on the weekend. Keys was virtually BOG, I would have thought. Kicked three, gave probably a couple away, but he was dangerous up there. Really interesting watch that one with Carlton. They need to find someone else to help Saad get the ball out of the fence.
David King today said Carlton were arrogant. Do you feel like they almost walked into that game expecting to win?
No, he spoke about, I read that about broken tackles and all that, and, you know, from some of their senior players. I'm not so sure the arrogance. The Crows have been playing like this for quite a while. Mm. High tempo, lots of pressure, numbers around the ball. They are a dangerous side to play against. And the Swans even felt it last week. I mean, they dominated. What they kicked, 9-2 in the first quarter. It got back to 3 goals and Swans were panicking. So I think Kingy, because he's potted their list unmercifully with Kane Corns, I think he's underestimated the Crows. I reckon they're way better than their position on the ladder tells you.
The Tigers were the other ones who helped shape that battle for the top eight. And as one of our text messages says, he says, a lot of experts keep saying you wouldn't want to face Richmond in finals. I think this is I think these are the reasons why, but why would you, can you please expand? And he goes on to list some of the other close losses and close wins that the Tigers have had. They've been in all games in the last quarter except for Melbourne, says this SMSer, which is all factual. Should teams still fear Richmond and why?
Yeah, they should. I assume Dusty comes back in the next couple of weeks. Looks like Grimes is out for the finals, if they make the finals, which is a major blow.
Yeah.
They have got backup there, so Bolter can go back there and help out. He did ruck forward, I think, on the weekend. So they've got their key forwards back. Bolton's in here. Dusty's the key here. If they can get him back, I don't know where he's at. They're not saying much. They need him back badly. And if they get him back and Grimes comes back to the finals here, you don't want to play. These have been a funny side, haven't they? Look, they were 7 goals down, looked like they were going to get done by 20. And then they come back and win the game. I don't know if it was so much them or so much Brisbane who were all disappointing. And the player they really didn't want to lose, they didn't want to lose Bailey at a crucial time. And, God, I don't know what they were doing with their medisub, having fought as a medisub. needed a runner because they lack runners, Brisbane. You know, they've really got the two blokes in their team who can break open or run lines is Zorko and Bailey, and they didn't want to lose Bailey. They haven't got anyone else, really, who can break the lines. Caden Coleman doesn't break the lines. Good player. And Rich, I know he wasn't playing, but also, so he doesn't break the lines. He can kick over them, but that's their Achilles heel, Brisbane Lions. But Richmond, if they can get in, still going to be, you can't predict what's going to happen here with the last three rounds. This is ridiculous that, you know, Carlton are vulnerable, Freo are vulnerable. So It's a really interesting last round. It's been a fantastic year, Jordan. The whole year, you don't know what's happening game to game, week to week. It's been enormous.
Does it feel like, and emotion is pretty universal across football, whether we sort of acknowledge it or realise it at the time, but we sort of know it subconsciously that emotion and momentum and a groundswell can help teams back into matches, help swing the momentum in their favour. And the Tigers, are the Tigers the sort of team, especially when they play at the MCG, which is sort of, you know, that's stating the bleeding obvious, but are they a team more than anyone else who plays the most on emotion?
And then they got a dangerous brand of footy. It's you know, Jake Neville wrote a great article on The Age the other week. I might have given him a little bit of help because I've been banging on about this for ages. They play a great brand of footy where, you know, when they get rolling, it's hard to stop. It's numbers around the ball. You know, we've watched Richmond over the last 5 years, and you might go watch Collingwood, where Lepich and Fly have been, and I'm watching another version of Richmond playing in Collingwood. That surge off our back, blokes getting the ball because they've got numbers around the ball where it's important. So that's so good. But what's happened to Richmond this year is that they've got scored on a lot easier than they have in the past, which is a bit of a worry for them. But, yeah, I still wouldn't like to be playing them in a final.
Sydney, let's head outside of Victoria for a moment. The Sydney Swans are on a tear at the moment. They've won 4 games in a row. They've won, I think, 7 of their last 9 games. They've lost to Essendon and Port Adelaide in that time as well. They've got a pretty good run home as well with North Melbourne, Collingwood and St Kilda. So they could, as I was saying before, if Melbourne stumble in their final 3 matches, which is Collingwood, Carlton and Brisbane for Melbourne, well then Sydney could potentially be in second and set themselves up for a great run in the finals if they get that home qualifier. The Sydney Swans, are they that highly rated for you in the premiership favouritism?
I had them probably, they're probably not quite ready yet. I had them at that all year. They're not quite ready yet. My biggest worry with the Swans is I think they're a midfielder short. Heavy reliance on a 21-year-old Warner and Parker. They're playing Papley up there in the midfield. He's been going all right. My biggest worry for them was if Buddy gets injured again, and you know he's had a history of the last few years of injury, that are they going to be good enough in their forward line to score enough? Now, we know they've got really good players like Heaney and Haywood as well, but their backup tools, and Reed's had a good year too, but their backup tools are not the best defenders because the best defender at the moment is playing on Buddy. So that was my worry for him, but Buddy looks in ripping nick. Buddy could have a great final series and Sydney could do some real damage. They need the McCartan brothers to hold up and Rampy, so they lost all those blokes last year with injury. So obviously, Button didn't play. Rampy missed the whole year. Buddy missed basically the whole year. Heaney missed a fair whack with, I think it was a finger injury, if I can remember correctly. They had no midfield. They've got them all back and they've got them all firing. You don't want to play them up in Sydney, do you? So that's crucial for them, that top, if they can get in the top two and then they have to play the third side up in Sydney, that's a big bonus to go straight into the preliminary final for them.
And on Friday night, Melbourne, how much did that win maybe put at ease or help placate some of those who might have carried doubts around Melbourne? Their form line recently hasn't been that bad when you really stack it up from the bye onwards. They've only lost 2 games from the bye and won the other 4, plus a couple of interstate wins, a couple of big wins there against Brisbane and Port Adelaide, Fremantle now as well, losses to the Cats and the Dogs. But Melbourne, this is their finals really starts now, doesn't it? They play top 8 teams in the run home. But as far as what we saw on Friday night, is that more like Melbourne? Does it help put to ease maybe some doubts that we had?
Look, they looked on Friday night like this is back to the Melbourne of old, but still their forward line didn't function great. Their defence won them the game. They kept 3 out of 5, 9, but Freo's forward line's always a bit of a problem. So, you know, their defence has been great all year and their midfield's been super, but Freo looked to me like Brayshaw and Sorong, you know, they're 21, 22-year-olds, have shouldered a lot of the responsibility, Mundy a little bit, and Brody, which didn't see coming, but they just haven't got enough mids, Freo, to carry this through the end of the season. They're doing a super job, but they're minus that, and their forward line, well, Tabiner's horribly out of form. Lobb's hot and cold. Walters is hot and cold. They really haven't got enough there to cause some havoc. And these defence is great. They played them on a break, the Freo forward line. That was too easy for them. Their forward line's still a major worry. They can't get any tools going there, but I'm assured that Tom McDonald will be back before the final. So we thought that he might be off for the year, but I think he's going to be back before the finals. He's crucial now. Ben Brown will play next week, I think, which probably means Wiedemann comes out. But Ben Brown, McDonald, Fritsch, and they're back to their premiership-winning forward line at the right time of the year, and this is the time of the year they really played their best.
And just
Saints is the interesting one. Yeah, just quickly, Saints is the interesting one. The ball, they're in the eight. The ball's in their court. They're hard to read. Rat for Hanbury playing on the weekend, but I did a little bit of homework here, Jordan. Hanbury's played, if he plays the last three games, don't count finals, it means he's played 20 games in 5 years. This is his fifth year, I think. There.
Yeah, yep.
You know what it's worked out to? 200,000 a game for Hanbury. <Jeez. laughs> 200 large a game for Hanbury if he plays the last three of the year.
Actually, I didn't mind him on the weekend. I called that game. I thought he was.
Yeah, no, he's okay.
He was. Yeah, he went in a million miles an hour, playing as hard as nails, as always.
He was great. The bit I saw was when there were crossovers, isn't it? And the other really interesting watch is the Ken Hinckley watch at Port Adelaide. Mm. They're going to miss the finals now.
Yep.
He'll get asked about North and GWS jobs coaching a year to go. Be a discussion, you know, they'll obviously, if they're interested and they're keen, they'll offer him a 3-year contract. He's got 1 year left at Port. So I'm interested to see where that goes. A big watch there on the Hinckley and Port Adelaide coaching role.
Matt, one last one before I let you go. This was David Mundy speaking today, asking how he'd like to be remembered.
Oh, I don't need to be remembered. I just came in and played my part and did my role.
A simple answer for a straightforward but effective footballer who probably went understated throughout his entire career. He'll end up playing about 375 games or so, depending on how deep the Dockers go in the finals. But a word on David Mundy, his career. For me personally, I don't follow the Dockers, but he's one of my favourite players outside of the team I support.
Yeah, you got to love that bloke. You just love his demeanour, the way he goes about it. You know, how many 375? Has he ever played a poor one? I can't remember him playing a poor one. He might not have been a star, out-and-out star, but, you know, like, oh, he won. I think he did poll one in Brownlow 1 year, but he puts in, week out. That's all you can ask of anyone. He's a credit to himself, how well he's gone. And is he more of a favourite son than Pav at Freo? Possibility. Possibly.
I've got my producer's a Docker supporter. Hang on. Is David Mundy more of a favourite son than Pav, yes or no? Yes. Thumbs up from the Docker's producer here.
Thumbs up, okay. Yeah, I thought as much. I mean, he is so loved by... You know you've had a great career when the opposition people love you to death.
Yeah.
And credit to him. We're going to miss him.
Yeah.
Love, you know, that hairstyle hadn't changed much, and it's going to disappear pretty quick, I think.
Matt, always a pleasure to have a chat to you. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you, Jordan.
Matt Randell with us, our Monday night expert here on the Macca's Run. And you can send through your text messages 0433 98 11 16 if you have any final thoughts. Thanks to Temper, a mattress like no other. And thank you to Link, who gave us the all clear as well from a Dockers perspective, our producer here on the Macca's Run. We'll take our final break here on SEN. Jordan Canellis with you. Send through your text messages. We'll head around the globe and see what's been happening around the sporting world to wrap things up on the Macca's Run tonight. First serve coming up next, and then we take you to Birmingham for the Commonwealth Games from 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on SEN. So we're just over an hour away from getting you to the live coverage of the Comm Games. That'll be later on, the first serve after this, but one more segment of Macca's Run next. Welcome back to the Macca's Run. Jordan Canellis here, finishing things up for you. The first serve not far away. on SCN. The Comm Games live coverage coming your way from 8 p.m. right across the nation on SCN. You can tune in at any time when the games are on. Obviously, it's not on during the day. But during the night, if there's other programming on, it'll always be there for you on SCN Fanatic, so you can listen on the app. A couple of bits of some highlights from the weekend of sport all around the world. England won their first major football trophy in 56 years this morning. Now, I have no personal ties to England, no family there. I've never lived there. I'm not English by any lineage, so this means nothing to me directly. But I stayed up until 5 a.m. this morning watching the English women's football team, the Lionesses, do what the men's team have repeatedly failed to do since 1966 and win a tournament. They took out the women's Euros with a 2-1 win in extra time against the powerhouse Germany. If you can get to the highlights, check out the first goal from Ella Toon, a 22-year-old who had the audacity to outrageously chip the goalkeeper to open the scoring for England. And then the wild celebrations when they won the trophy with "It's coming home" blaring out around London at long last. But more importantly for this match, it was played in front of 87,000 people at Wembley Stadium. It was on mainstream TV all across England and has been the centre of the footballing world and at the centre of English culture and life for the last week through the knockout phase. English and European celebrities and former footballers and everyone else was tweeting about it, commenting about it. It sets things up nicely from our perspective for the World Cup next year in Australia and New Zealand. The quality of football has reached another level in Europe. Time zones makes it a bit difficult to watch international football, both men's and women's, in the middle of the night. But from the last time I checked in with what the European nations were doing in the women's game, which was at the Olympics last year, to now, I've become far more worried as a Matildas fan for what awaits the green and gold on home soil in 12 months. Hopefully, what happens this morning serves as a wake-up call for our coach, Tony Gustafsson, to set things in stone for Australia and quit experimenting with the Matildas this close to a World Cup. The Comm Games enjoyed its first weekend and Australia are blitzing the field. My sport of choice yesterday was track cycling at the Velodrome, where there's a new Richo man about town, Matthew Richardson, the 23-year-old from WA. He rode himself into gold in the sprints against the best sprint cyclist in the world, Nicholas Paul from Trinidad and Tobago. Emma McKeon won her 11th gold medal to be the most successful Comm Games athlete of all time and is rapidly hurtling towards becoming one of Australia's greatest ever athlete, full stop. And for the rest of the sport on the weekend, the Special K's had a triumph in Atlanta, Kyrgios and Kokkinakis defeating the other all-Aussie pair of Kubler and Piers to win another doubles trophy, but I'll let BP tell you more about that after 7. The Melbourne Storm halted a 4-game losing streak. They were victors finally this weekend over the New Zealand Warriors, but the upsets were the Eels over the Panthers and the Tigers upsetting the Brisbane Broncos. Amanda Nunes reaffirmed herself as the greatest UFC women's fighter of all time in probably, frankly, what was the most entertaining 5 rounds of sport on the weekend when she defeated Juliana Pena at UFC 277. That's it for the Macca's Run. First serve up after this. See ya.